All right, let's get started. First of all, welcome to the last Link session of the day. And I truly appreciate your time, spending time at 5 o'clock, another hour or so with the session. And I know it's been a long day, but hopefully I'll try to make it as interesting as possible. And then we'll run into a few sets of demo to kind of, mix things up. So this session's about how you plan for a voice. Anytime you're actually thinking about enabling Link for voice workloads. And I was actually thinking about how I should be approaching this session. But one approach could be just kind of, plain vanilla and, just talk about all the new features that Link has to offer. But that doesn't actually help for folks that haven't actually tried out voice or for audience that are new to Link. So I would like for you to think from, or at least, wear a lens or look through the sets of features that I'm going to talk about from an end user perspective. So the way voice is being sort of utilized in the present and also going in the future is very different from how it used to be, just a few years back. So just to kind of, give you a sort of, have something for you so that you could relate to, how many of you folks would like to be connected all the time, irrespective of whether you're in your office or when you're traveling to events like TechEd? Okay, so we're done. Thanks, folks. But seriously, I mean, I'm assuming everybody wants to be connected all the time. And it's not just going to be with voice, right? The modalities that we currently frequently use is instant messaging, so that you kind of want to escalate from text messaging to potentially escalating to voice and then, potentially video and such, right? And the fact that we always want to be connected, it kind of changes the paradigm quite significantly. So the PBX solutions or IPPBX solutions that we are traditionally used to does not help us with achieving the new paradigm of usage. And when you actually limit audio to just a phone device that gets stationed on your desk, it's very limiting. So the kind of scenarios that gets enabled is very limiting, and given the complete shift in the paradigm, it does not help us. So I would like for you to think about what kind of solution that you'd like to offer your end user from that perspective, and as and when we talk about the features that Link actually supports, hopefully you will be able to relate to what I'm actually talking about. My name is Subbu Chandrasekharan. I'm a program manager with the Link Business Voice team, and I work off of Redmond. Let me get the clicker. Yeah, there you go. All right. Okay, for the agenda for today is I would like to split the total voice offering into four buckets. One is from a link-to-link calling perspective. And it's pretty natural that within an enterprise or within a company, there's going to be a lot of conversations happening within the employees. And the kind of features that get enabled to facilitate that really matters, and how it actually promotes productivity in terms of having a lot of convenient features definitely adds to the value of a solution. The second bucket is all about how Link interfaces with your traditional PBX or IPPBX, or it could be even with the PSTN cloud. And the list of features that are enabled for the end users, the list of features that the end users has control over, and also things that can be managed by an administrator that allows the end user to control the basic usage of these features. The third bucket is all about enterprise-grade features. These are more advanced features. These aren't just about just the end user. It could be how a business process could be defined around the set of voice features that's offered. And the final bucket is all about networking, right? I mean, clearly, the kind of solution that's being offered has to, does rely heavily on the kind of network that your company has set up. So that is a very critical piece that needs to be considered. And we will look at the kind of solution that Link actually has developed to facilitate either conditions where the network condition isn't the most optimal, and also ways for the administrator to identify hotspots and be able to address such situations. So just to kind of, you know, bulletize the things that we're going to cover, so the policy and the management capabilities that administrator can directly influence what the end user is going to be capable of. And the other pretty significant piece is also the ecosystem that Link has created. This could be in the form of different gateways, SIP trunking partners, or a list of endpoint devices. More the better from the perspective of being able to address various scenarios as appropriate according to the requirements. And of course, the final bucket is about enterprise-grade features. And we will look into certain test cases and also the scenarios that gets addressed. So a basic question, right? Is Link-wise a PBX replace? And I know that that is a very basic question that everybody has in mind. And before we jump into this, just a quick show of hands. How many of you folks are in the process of understanding more about Link to see whether it's appropriate for your company or not? Okay, that's great. So there is the anticipation from the session is you want to learn more about the capabilities and hence want to kind of, you know, consider it. How many of you folks have already deployed Link in some form but are considering whether to enable voice or not? Okay, so that's good again. And how many of you folks have already enabled voice in your company? Okay, excellent. All right, so it looks like there is a even split, one-third for each of the categories. Hopefully, you know, each one of the categories will be able to get value out of this session. If certain things are too obvious because you've already deployed the solution, my apologies. My intention is to actually add value to as many people as possible right here. Okay, so is Link a PBX replace? Absolutely, and the reason why we believe it is so is it's got a full set of all the IP PBX replace features that a company would typically expect of, and it has a broad choice of third-party device ecosystem, as I had mentioned. This could be in the form of a gateway, SIP trunking partners, E911 partners, different devices to facilitate end-user scenarios. And it is fundamentally designed for high availability. And during the later part of the session, we will look into what different conditions the product itself is designed for. It could be as simple as I need a failover immediately so that no user is left without service at any point in time. Or it could be in the form of I want to ensure that data does not get lost. I definitely want a workflow that helps me sort of, you know, restore a potentially lost data. And finally, if your company is already has already deployed Active Directory and Exchange, that's great because that actually simplifies your Link deployment quite significantly, because these are the two external dependencies that we currently have, and if your company already has it, it just makes your deployment so much easier. All right, so now jumping into link-to-link calling. So we will go through each one of these buckets, and each one of these buckets is kind of split into sub-buckets, if you will. And this slide kind of talks about it. It's a summary, so I will just kind of skim through it, but we will look into each of the sub-buckets in detail in the following slides. So easy-to-use features. So anywhere access without a VPN. So I know there was an event in one of our competitors, very similar to the TechEd event, where it was kind of mocking the concept that one could use their own personal computer or a laptop as a phone device. I mean, I thought it was funny just because I don't remember the last time using an IP phone myself. It was a long, long time ago. I've never really felt the need for it. All I need is an optimized USB device, and I'm actually freely able to roam around without any problem at all. And then I do have a couple of demos that kind of showcases that, right? And the concept of anywhere access without a VPN is very powerful. Whether I'm in my hotel room or I'm at the convention center, it doesn't really matter. I am able to seamlessly connect myself and then make myself available to be communicated with various modalities. Camp-on tagging with presence, we'll look into that, what it is. Fast redial and recent conversations. And again, people could argue, redial is not really a new concept. It's been there for ages, and really the recent conversations has also been nothing innovative. But this is really talking about, irrespective of what modality that you had once communicated with a bunch of people, you're still able to leverage that and then convert it to whatever new modality that you want to communicate with. And then from a productivity standpoint, that's great value. And I've got more slides that actually talks about the scenario that you could leverage. Music on hold, of course. And it's surprising how much music on hold is valued. It still continues to be valued, and definitely there is support for music on hold for link peer-to-peer. Connecting everywhere. So anywhere is different from everywhere. It's not simple, but actually it's a magical concept called federation. So what that actually enables companies to do is to have a trust relationship between as many companies as possible. And that allows the employees of one company to seamlessly communicate with the employees of another company. So what that actually enables various companies to do is to communicate, not rely on the PSTN cloud for communication. And also an added bonus is it's not just limited to voice. You can seamlessly communicate using voice, video, application sharing, you name it. You've got all the modalities. So this is communication everywhere, and it's kind of seamless. And it isn't just limited to link deployments. We also have what's called as public PIC federation. So this is basically your public services such as Yahoo, AOL, and Live Messenger. And with one of the cool things that we had enabled in Link 2010 is with Live Messenger, you can enable HD video, and that's pretty powerful, right? And one could argue, Live Messenger, yeah, it's large for now, but it isn't, the fastest growing network. But it just opens up the possibility of, what could come in the future, right? And just not to really hype up things, but it is the possibility is endless here. Superior audio and video experience. Link has a very stringent qualification program, and this actually there is a separate program that we work with third parties to make sure the product is developed specifically to provide optimized experience for Link. And if it's USB, there is a separate a different criteria to be qualified for the Link product. If it's IP phone, there is a separate criteria. They would still have to comply with our codec requirements, namely the wideband and HD video codecs that we currently support. And the couple of other the client features, which I'm going to talk to you pretty shortly, I have some screenshots of that, so I will just hold on to that for now. Okay. So easy-to-use feature, anywhere access without a VPN. So, So let me show you a quick demo. So here what I have is, this is a demo topology that I currently have, right? I mean, it's all good. I mean, nothing great about it. Now, I'm currently connected to two networks. One is the VLAN that where the demo topology itself is set up. I'm also connected to the internet through wireless. So I can connect to both the networks. That's internal to the convention center. The other one is I'm connected to the whole wide world. Now, all I have to do is to change to my identity. This is my real identity. This isn't my demo identity. And have the product kind of, you know, figure it out on how I can stay connected. So all I've said is I want to connect as subusi@microsoft.com. And now, the product is in the process of discovering where the server is going to be. And it's discovered and it's basically connected to itself. And this basically works seamlessly regardless of where I am. I'm not in VPN. It's just my connectivity to the outside world is only through the internet, and that's it. Then I can go back to my alter ego. Anyway, you get the idea. Okay, so camp on and tagging with presence. This is a feature that that enables you to tag a person so that when the person is available, you could either, you know, just basically connect back with them. It could be in the form of, you know, audio, video, or instant messaging, anything that could be. And fast redial and recent conversation. And what this is if you look at the screenshot to your left, it basically is a transcript of all the communications that you've had recently. And this isn't limited to just voice. It could have been in the form of an instant message. It could have been in the form of application sharing or whatever modality it is. But there are situations where we actually want to get back to the people that we recently communicated with, potentially with a different modality. And this is what it actually lets you do. And finally, the music on hold, and this is situations when you are actually in a conversation with a person. You have to put that person on hold and, you know, potentially have another conversation with a person. In the meantime, the music on hold is actually activated at that point in time. Okay, so next concept is, of course, clearly federation calls. So this enables you to seamlessly communicate with another company or with the public interface cloud. This includes AOL, Yahoo, Live Messenger, and then potentially it does open up the possibility of other networks that that we could potentially sign up with. And if you look into the future, what that essentially does is oftentimes, you know, the communication between the company employees and the outside world is through PSTN. And it could be business, but like oftentimes it's also a personal communication that happens. And think about the possibility of not actually requiring to go through the PSTN network every time that needs to happen. If the federation is done on another provider that has millions and millions of users, then just think about the possibility of what it potentially does to not relying on PSTN for outside communication. And as I had mentioned, it's not just limited to instant messaging. It's also HD video that we support for Live Messenger and potentially more to come in the future. And this is a quick summary of the federation capability. If you have a link deployment, all the modalities are supported. So when I say collaboration, that actually includes application sharing, your whiteboarding, your desktop sharing, that would be kind of encompassing application sharing as well. Audio, video, seamless, and instant messaging and presence, of course. Office 365, the same. So if federation is set between two companies, one having link on-prem deployment, and the other that is signed up for Office 365, the federation, once federation trust itself is set up, it's just seamless across all the modalities. With Windows Live audio and video with HD supported, great. Instant messaging and presence, yes, we've supported it for a long time, and we continue to support it. AOL, Yahoo, and some of the XMPP providers, such as Google Voice, Google's service. So we do support instant messaging and presence with them. At this point in time, other forms of media is not supported, but potentially in the future. Okay, so link-to-link calls. So this is very... And again, given the concept of what Link enables you to do, it enables you to roam around. It's you're not actually confined to your desk phone anymore. And oftentimes, the USB device and the quality of the USB device is very critical. And if the quality of the device itself is compromised, then the quality of experience of your media sessions aren't going to be as optimal. And what the link client actually enables you to do is it provides you an activity indicator. So whether you're on a call or it again associates your activity with presence, and it also indicates the kind of device that you currently are using. And we have a demo that kind of showcases different devices that could be used depending on what situation that you currently are dealing with. Hold on to that thought for a bit. And then more importantly, the client actually lets you know what the current network condition is. So if you're experiencing bad audio quality, it's very similar to when you use your mobile device. When the signal strength is bad, then obviously your expectation of what the quality itself is, it's going to be appropriately set. And similarly, it actually helps the end user to set context to why potentially sometimes the audio quality or the video quality is bad. And... The network health indicator does exactly that. So from a handset, headset, and USB phones perspective, the end user experience, basically, we want to guarantee the first time you plug in, it just provides you a very optimal quality. And as mentioned, we have a stringent criteria for our partners to meet that gets them certified for Link. And from an admin experience, there are other processes that have been defined that enables them to guarantee from a support perspective. So our partners are required to sign up for the TSA Net. So for folks that are not familiar with TSA Net, it is nothing but it's a huge forum of various companies that kind of educate and also provide support for products. So if there is a situation where there is product support needed, this is sort of like a huge pool. This is like a big forum where to get support from. And firmware and then remote software updates are an essential requirement. And this applies to both the USB firmware updates as well as IP phones. IP phones, they follow a different paradigm to update themselves. Firmware updates on the USB phone is a little more tricky. However, it is baked into the part of the process. So if there needs to be a firmware update, it kind of gets taken care of automatically. And there is a contractual SLA with each of the partners, which means that anytime there is an update, it needs to be sort of pushed out to the customers within a stipulated period of time. So this, again, does guarantee that updates to the end customer reaches on time. And from a portfolio perspective, it's always a joint development. So anytime Link actually works on a new version of a product, there is always joint development with the third party, just so when the product itself is released, you're also guaranteed various profiles and portfolios of devices that's going to be available. And it doesn't stop with just that. Even after the product is released, we have a partner engineering team that continues to work with partners to enable various different profiles of devices to be available. Okay, so for some reason, the demo thing doesn't show up. But anyway, I have a demo here. So let me just quickly sign in. Okay, so right now, as you can see, let me just zoom that for a bit. All right. So the link client itself indicates what device is currently being plugged in. So right now, I am plugged into a Polycom CX100 device. And I want to be able to check, is this device really optimally set for me? So what I could do is do a check, quality check, essentially. So I'm going to call an application that...
After the tone, then wait to hear how you sound.
Hi, this is a test message. I'd like to check the quality of the device.
Here's what I've heard.
I'd like to check the quality of the device.
If you like what you heard, then you're all set. If not, check your audio device settings and try again. Goodbye.
Okay. It worked, but as you can see, the volume level of the announcement itself was much higher than what I recorded. And I obviously don't want to be yelling into the device. I want to be able to talk normally as I would always do. So let's check how the device setting itself is currently. So this is the speaker setting. It's set to high, so I'm comfortable with how I hear the device. But as you can see, the microphone level is fairly low, and that potentially could be the problem right there. So let me set it to a little higher so that it just picks my voice better. And perform a test again.
To check your call quality, record a short message after the tone, then wait to hear how you sound.
This is a test again after the mic level has been changed.
This is a test again after the mic level has been changed.
If you like what you heard, then you're all... If not, check your audio device settings and try again.
Okay, so this kind of gives you an idea. So clearly the level was actually changed, and this ensures that how I believe I'm heard by others is actually true. This is a good validation right there. And there could be situations where I want to use various devices at this point in time. Just to give you a simple example, I want my default device to be speakerphone. Because when I'm working and if somebody's calling me, I just want to just turn it on. And, you know, it's much easier than, you know, picking up a handset and then talking. So speakerphone comes in handy. But it's not handy all the time. If the conversation seems to be longer or if you want more privacy, you'd rather use a different device. So Link also supports another very cool feature where you're actually able to use multiple devices at the same time. So it still shows my default device as speaker, but if I wanted, I could switch over to a new device that I might or might not want as default. But let's say at this point in time, I do not want it as my default. I'd still like my speakerphone to be default. And so let me actually, just to showcase a scenario, interesting scenario right here, I'm going to be talking to Ty. And for some reason, I always find it interesting. In a demo, people are always discussing sales report, right? I don't know what's up with demos and sales report, but what the heck, you know, let's do the same. So I just sent an IM. I'm hoping my demo buddy is still awake. Okay, he did respond. Okay, I'm saying, do you want to call me? Hey, Ty.
Hey, Dan. How you doing?
Hey, good, good, good. So what do you think about the report?
You know, some of the numbers could use a little bit of work, but I think overall it'll be a good one.
Okay. And what do you think about all the mistakes that were committed in the report?
Well, like I said, it could definitely use a little bit of work.
Okay. So now it's getting a little sensitive, so I'd rather use more privacy. So I can actually seamlessly switch to another device without actually having to hang up. All right, Ty, thanks for your time. I'll talk to you later. Bye. All right. Clicker. Okay, link to phone calling. And a quick high-level overview of this one. It's completely, so from an end-user experience, from a link client experience, it provides a completely integrated PSTN dialing experience. What I mean by that is it's very intuitive from a sense that if you're used to dialing a person using a number, it works. If you're thinking about a person by name, it works again seamlessly. And the client itself has an integrated dial pad, and the contact list, you could also add the PSTN number as a contact list, just so if it's a frequently accessed contact, then you just click to call and get going with that rather than actually having to type in. And there are also plugins available for browsers, which we will look shortly into. Simple call management. So the link client itself provides a very easy user experience to control your calls, such as call forwarding, simultaneous ringing, and then also personal handling using Exchange UM. You could do things like you can integrate when you want the call to be forwarded to your cell phone or your home number, depending on how your calendar is set up. So, for example, off hours could basically be forwarded to your home and things of that nature. Emergency location and awareness. And this is basically the E911 and also the location information is very dynamic in the sense that it actually follows you where you currently are. Let's say you're basically based in Redmond, and it does not mean that you're always going to be there. It could so happen that you're also traveling to the East Coast, you're going to your sales office in California or, I don't know, like Illinois, wherever it is. So the solution itself is very adaptive from the sense that it knows your current location. And then the moment that an emergency occurs, an emergency call needs to be placed, it takes into consideration where your current location is, and then it egresses to appropriate gateways. And malicious call tracing, we will look into that shortly. I have a separate slide for that. Okay, so link to phone calling. So dial by name, dial by number, pretty intuitive from the sense that whatever occurs to you first, you can absolutely choose what's applicable and what's preferred. It has an integrated dial pad in the sense at times when people are not comfortable just with using the search bar to dial the number, or it could be like when you're calling your credit card company or whatever it is, this actually supports the DTMF where you have to punch in the numbers using the dial pad. And the contactless PSD number, we've already looked into that. There is also an add-on for Internet Explorer for Link, which actually enables you to call through the internet, through the browser itself. And me personally, I find it extremely helpful because oftentimes at work, I search for certain services that I want to contact. And rather than me switching back and forth between the application and the browser, this add-on enables me to just one click and then I'm actually in a call. So that is pretty handy and powerful. Okay, so link to phone calling, simple call management. So this again, the nice thing about this is the end user is actually empowered to do all these. There is no reliance on the administrator to set policies. I'm sorry, the policy still has to be set, which we will look in a short while. But once the policy is enabled, the end user is empowered to change the configuration as needed. In this particular case, as you can see, the call forwarding can be set to whatever. It could be the mobile number or other. It could be your home number, any number of your preference. And the same goes with simultaneous ringing. So for folks that are not familiar with call forwarding and simultaneous ringing, a simul ring basically rings both your link client as well as your cell phone or home number, whatever is being configured. Call forwarding, on the other hand, there are two options. One is you can just forward a call immediately, or if you could ring it when there is no response, the call gets forwarded to your home number or your mobile number. And that can be controlled by the end user using Link, no reliance on the administrator whatsoever. There is also integration with Exchange UM, if you will, and this is where you could basically define your work hours. And depending on your work hours, if it's outside of work hours, you can set rules to forward the calls accordingly. So during the work hours, it could be your work number. I'm assuming it is your work number. Outside of work hours, it could be your home or mobile number. Okay. I don't know how many of you folks actually attended the Dial Plan deep dive yesterday. We touched on this kind of sort of superficially, but the voice policy also enables you to set call capabilities for an end user. And this includes things such as call forwarding delegation. Delegation is where you are enabling another person to accept call on your behalf. Call transfer, call park. Call park is interesting because, and again, we will be talking about it in a few slides from now, this is the ability for you to pick a call, park it for someone else to pick the call. It's different from call transfer from the sense that you're not actually waiting till the call itself is sort of transferred real time. Team call, of course, is when I can actually have my call forwarded to my team. If in case I'm not available, I at least make sure my team is available to take the call for all the critical situations. PST and rerouting, this is to do with call admission control. This is a little bit more advanced in the sense that you could either enable or disable PST and rerouting based on whether you want the call to be rerouted through PSTN. And oftentimes, I've seen companies that do not want to allow PSTN rerouting just for the fact that they don't want to egress through the PSTN unnecessarily when it's not really warranted. This policy enables you to, lets you basically enable or disable PSTN rerouting. and bandwidth policy override. And this is, again, to do with call admission control, where this lets the end user bypass the call admission control check itself. In other words, when the call is received by these users, the end user is always bypassing the call admission control check. In other words, they're always guaranteed that the call is going to be established. Malicious call tracing, let's hold on to that till a couple slides from now. And common area phones as well, and we're going to be talking about that as well. The common area phones is interesting because these phones don't actually belong to any end user. And traditionally, you would think these common area phones do not have policy enforcements. Either they work or they don't. However, the common area phones under Link, there is pretty significant amount of policy management that can happen. To bring it to your attention, the second row, the first one is not so interesting because that really identifies what type of a device it is. In this case, we are saying it's a common area phone. The client policy, the policy which is to enable hot desking or not. So there are situations when you would have a bunch of common area phones, and you would also have a lot of traveling employees. And this enabling this policy lets the traveling employees sort of log into the phone and then have the phone make it their own. This is kind of like a hoteling scenario. When the timeout happens, so in cases where employees forget to log out of the phone, it automatically times out of the registration, and it becomes a common area phone one more time. It becomes common area phone again. Some of the voice policies that can be enabled or disabled would be call transfer, call park, and call forwarding, for obvious reasons. If you want to limit the common area phones to just being able to receive or make calls, that's what it's going to be. But if there are scenarios where there's going to be call transfers and forwarding and stuff, this can be enabled as well. Meeting policy, this is to do with whether you want to limit the common area phone as a peer-to-peer device or whether you can enable it to be escalated to conferences. And then external access policy. This one's an interesting one. I mean, you could think of it as a defense against someone just basically stealing it and then taking it out and then using it from home. In which case, if the provisioned common area phone is not enabled for external access, the phone itself is going to be of no use. It has to be in the enterprise network for it to be useful. Okay, so the next slide is about emergency location and awareness. So let's look at the E911 offering. So for folks that are not familiar with E911, it's enhanced 911. So rather than supporting just emergency call, and then hitting the right gateway, obviously. Enhanced 911 is a step above, where it actually provides rich location information so that, given that it is IP telephony, it actually enables the PSAP or the dispatch center for emergency to locate the end user accurately. And the next slide is going to talk about how it's actually implemented, but that's kind of gives you an idea. Another thing for you folks as a customer to keep in mind is traditionally we've had service providers that do E911, but now there are offerings from our partners where they're actually bundling SIP trunking along with E911. So bundling actually, from a value proposition perspective, that could work out fairly well for you, and I'd encourage you to look into that. So you could potentially sort of sign up for SIP trunking and E911 and bundle together. So that is an added bonus, if you will. So emergency dialing and location. So the way here's the way it's actually set up. The topology for Link itself is defined in two ways. One is one that is Link server-centric. The other one that is network-centric. Server-centric basically lets you define various sites. I might have a data center in North America, one in Europe, and one in Asia. And the link topology itself lets you define these segments and also various pools or clusters in each of these sites. Network configuration, on the other hand, is a reflection of how the company's network itself is set up. And it is not a virtual representation, if you will. So it really reflects how the company's network itself is set up. And that's called network configuration settings. So once that is set, during the link sign-in process, using the subnet information, an information call is the location policy is being sent to the link endpoint. And that location policy is what determines during an emergency what gateway the call is going to egress off of. And even if I were to travel to another company location, and the moment that I sign in, the information that I feed into the system and the information that I get back will ensure that when emergency strikes, I actually egress through the right gateway. And the bullet about if the same user was in Spain, that kind of basically highlights it. The fact that the system actually is aware of where your current location is, and it egresses the call based on where you're currently located. And there is also another masking feature, which is pretty powerful. Just to give you an example, if you were an end user from North America, then instinctively you are actually going to be dialing 911, right? Even if emergency hits, you're not going to be thinking about what the local emergency is. There is also a feature in Link that enables you to basically have a list of masks. So if I travel to Europe and if I dial 911, the system could actually understand that I'm actually doing an emergency call, and then it translates it to the local emergency call. And that's pretty powerful. And core capabilities exist irrespective of whether or not the location information itself is available. What do I mean by that? Even if the location cannot be determined, we still would continue to support 911. It's just not going to be enhanced, but it's still going to be 911. Okay, malicious call tracing. So we had a preview into that and how it is configured. By default, it's not enabled for any of the users. What this enables an end user to do is there could be occurrences where there are calls that are very, let's say there is an harassment call, and we want to be able to track and then have the administrator sort of take the necessary actions, maybe disable the account or whatever form it could be. And that's basically what this feature is. And it is enabled through voice policy, and it is not enabled by default. So once it is enabled, and if the end user determines the call that was received was indeed malicious, once the call is ended, or the end user could end the call and use the link client to report a malicious call. Now, the report itself gets recorded into the CDR, and our CDR reporting tool enables you to search for these malicious calls and basically take the necessary actions. If it happens to be a call from within the company, it's much easier to track. If not, you still have all the necessary transcripts on when the malicious call was placed and be able to track it down. Okay, so the next bucket is all about enterprise calling features. So if do you folks have any questions that I can address before I proceed? All right. So enterprise calling features. So the advanced call handling would be call park is one. We'll look into that. Delegation private line, we'll look into that as well. Team call, which we kind of briefly looked into, which is the ability for a person to forward all the calls to a bigger team so that there is lesser chance of the call being missed. And enterprise calendar call routing, which we briefly looked into it. We'll look into it deeper. Essential features for information worker, integrated calendar, voicemail, and UM with Exchange. And may I remind you that it's not just limited to Link, it also is available for Link phone editions as well. We'll look into a few models that enable us to do it. Low-cost IP phones. This actually is pretty interesting because when we actually came up with our voice offering back in OCS 2007 and R2 when we made more enhancements, one of the biggest complaints that we received was the fact that our devices were super expensive, especially when it came to IP phones. And it's fair, right? I mean, clearly, you don't want to be spending hundreds of dollars. It's fair, and then we've come a long way to address that problem. This morning, I was talking to a person that actually complained there's a big profile of phone devices that feel very cheap. Which again is fair. So the point I'm trying to make is different people have different preferences and requirements, and this is where the value of third party or working with third party companies to develop their own devices comes in handy. So rather than just being limited to, let's say, Microsoft developing our own devices, we just let the ecosystem take care of it itself, and depending on your requirements, you know. You pretty much can get the kind of devices that you're looking for. We do support PIN-based authentication for these IP phones, and these are phones that don't really have any fancy input methods. So supporting PIN-based authentication is a must, and we do. Automated call distribution, unassigned numbers, which we briefly looked into during the dial plan deep dive session. We will look at that one more time with more details, of course. And attendant console for high volume application. And finally, the queuing and call routing and agent support. So we'll look at that deeper. So this slide is all about the enterprise calendar and call routing. We briefly looked into this, but what this actually enables you to do is to basically have your call routed accordingly based on your work hours. It lets you determine when that work hours, that is a reflection on what's in your calendar. And delegates, of course, it's a pretty straightforward concept where one contact could have his team take care of, have all the calls forwarded down. To eliminate the chances of important calls being missed. So let's take a deeper look into the call park. Just a quick show of hands, how many of your companies are currently using call park in some form? So there's a big audience for that. I mean, clearly you folks can identify with the importance of call park. So essentially what it actually lets you do is whenever calls are received, it lets you park the call for the person that you want to pick up. So it could be targeted to a particular person, or you don't know. It could be between departments. So a good example would be Home Depot. I call in, and a person from electrical answers, but my question's really on plumbing, and the person could park the call and page for someone in plumbing and then have that person pick the call and then have a conversation with me. And that's essentially what it does. Now, we do, from a call park client's perspective, we do support it on our Link attendant and our phone editions. And the retrieving clients, anything that's above OCS 2007 R2, common area phones could be done. Common area phones could be enabled for call park as well. As we saw, there is a separate voice policy that needs to be done. Now, the way it is also done is through defining an orbit range. Orbit range is nothing but a range of numbers that is needed to retrieve a particular call. And some of the caveats that need to be kept in mind is that an orbit number cannot be requested when you're parking the call. So you basically park the call, and then you're issued an orbit number. And that orbit number is what's going to be used by the retriever. So that's that. And one more recommendation would be to have enough orbit number so that we don't actually run out of it. We haven't actually looked, hit that situation yet, but it's always nice to have extra rather than running out of Orbitz number, which would cause the call park itself to fail. And some of the things that need to be kept in mind is you cannot assign a DID as an Orbitz number. In other words, you cannot sort of call into that number from outside the company network and retrieve a call, clearly. And in order for you to there is no concept of disabling an Orbitz number range, but what you could do is disable call park for a particular pool so that it's kind of disabled for all the users within a given pool. And no pickup possible for any ringing extensions. So you can't actually dial in an extension, and there should not be an overlap between the dial-in extension and the Orbitz number that's being issued. Anytime that happens, the extension would win over the mistaken Orbitz number, if you will. Private line. So private line is the concept where you have a hotshot in the company. Everybody knows the phone number. But the private line is just an additional line for that person to ensure that people that are aware of the private line is able to reach that person all the time. So from a SIP URI perspective, there is still one SIP URI, but there are two AD attributes for the line URI itself. So the public line URI attribute is visible to everybody. If I did a search in the AD, that line URI is what's going to show up. The private line information does not show up in your public profile. And the private line still supports all the basic call features, all the basic and advanced call features that would include call pickup park, call park as expected. And the simultaneous ring and the call deflections on the primary line carry over to the private line as well. And one thing to remember is it's the private line itself is supported only for inbound. So what that means is I can still do outbound, not a problem, but it's just that your outbound caller ID won't reflect your private line, which is in a way good. So you really don't want that to be exposed in any way. And it overrides all your policy setting, such as your call forwarding, do not disturb, and other routing options. So in other words, even if you were to set call forwarding or simultaneous ringing, your private line is always going to be reached at, even if you set do not disturb. And the reason being very simple, the philosophy of private line is to make sure you're always reachable. And of course, from a client perspective, it's got a distinct toast and a separate ring, just so if you're not in front of the computer, you still hear a different ring. If you're in front of the computer, it just is a different jazzy-looking toast. Okay, so the next slide is all about enabling your calendar and voicemail information that can be fetched from Exchange and enabled in your phone edition. And some of the powerful features that can be enabled are, one is you're actually able to join into the conference with just one click. And it just is a one-step process for you to join a conference using your phone edition. And we work with various partners. And we have from high-end devices to low-cost IP phones. And we work with partners such as Astra, Polycom, and SNOM. And SNOM is kind of a recent partner. They join as part of the what's called as the 3PIP program, third-party interop program. And SNOM is another company that's part of our profile as well. And for low-cost devices, we use PIN-based authentication. We don't do the AD authentication for that. Okay. So, and these are things that we've already sort of looked into, but just a quick summary of things. Um, Well, so I guess the point of the slide is basically to say that quality is the king here. We have some criteria that absolutely needs to be met to be qualified, and we have a large variety of phones and also the features that they support. The reason I'm rushing through this is I have a demo for you folks, and I'm going to showcase some of new sets of wireless phones that Polycom has developed. And it's basically showcasing the fact that it's the kind of devices that is being developed is not limited to the ideas that Microsoft come up with. It's basically what the ecosystem, you know, how the ecosystem gets creative, and they come up with, you know, very cool ideas. So what I'm holding here is a set of DECT phones, right? And these are wireless phones. And then the way it works is pretty impressive. These phones actually register to their own base station, and the base station registers to Polycom's what's called as the Kirk server. And the Kirk server registers all the end users on behalf of the end user itself. In other words, the end users do not need to sort of do a PIN-based authentication. Once this phone is associated to the CPURI and provisioned into the system, and that's it. That's all that needs to happen. And what's more creative is there are various profiles of these phones. One is these are candy phones, right? I mean, they look nice and whimsical, and it's a low-cost phone. But you could also have a purpose-driven, purpose-built phones. This is for office phones. It's kind of more expensive. It's nicer looking, and it lets you have contact lists and such. The other kind would be for factory. For example, these are really hardened phones. And this one has a gyroscope, so you could potentially build a third-party application where, let's say, a factory worker falls down, you could alert some supervisor, or you could also have like a callback application calling back into the employee and just to make sure the employee is doing fine or whatever it could be. And it actually lets you write third-party applications on top of what's already available. This is pretty interesting. This is built for the healthcare segment. Physically, it's built to ensure that it can be cleaned with wipes and it's waterproof, and it can be sanitized anytime. And it's just a different form factor, but it's kind of purpose built from that perspective. And the base station that I mentioned, the range is also pretty impressive. So if there is a clear line of sight, it covers up to 300 meters. So just to give you an idea, in order for us to cover the entire floor of the convention center, apparently two base stations would cover the entire convention center. And Max, my counterpart that works for Polycom. So how many devices does a base station cover? Okay, so it does cover up to 1,000 link-enabled devices. And again, this is really to showcase kind of the creativity that can go into the ecosystem and kind of meet various requirements that you specifically might have. Okay, so the next one is automatic call distribution features. So I want to see... Okay, great. So let me talk about two interesting features. One is called as the unassigned numbers. We briefly looked into that during the dial plan session, but what it is it actually allows you to create a range of unassigned numbers. So if those numbers get called, they can be automatic response back saying this number does not belong to any user and there is no associated user. So the caller is aware of what is happening. So that can be configured to have automatic response when those unassigned numbers are called. In addition to actually having an unassigned number, you could have that unassigned number as sort of like a blacklisted number. So let's say if someone were to call a 900 number and you want your company to block these numbers, they could be put into the pool of unassigned numbers and and you could have a specific message sort of played back to the end user itself. The next one is, actually, let me go to the next slide, is the response group. And I've actually, I mean, clearly response group is a very, very popular feature, even from a traditional PBX system and also with IP PBX system. And again, a quick show of hands, how many of you folks already have some form of response group in your company right now? Okay. And again, fairly, it's fairly popular. So here, what the response group actually lets you create various groups and have a single idea. So for the benefit of folks that are not familiar with response group, in fact, I did get a question about it this morning where the person was trying to figure out how to address a scenario or a problem that they currently are running into, but didn't actually wasn't aware that response group feature itself was available. So what this enables you to do is to have a single identity for a group. Let's say you're running a stockbroker company, a brokerage company, and there could be a single identity to all the brokers. And when the call is actually made inbound, the call, the PSTN number is associated to the group itself and is not associated to any of the agents, if you will. Now, when the call itself is received, you could have various criteria on how the call itself gets distributed. One of the ways is to basically fork to all the agents. If you're a small company, that works great, right? If you have like five agents, yeah, sure. Why not just fork it to everybody and then have the agent pick it up, especially if they're in the same workspace. The other option could be in the form of presence. So based on the presence, availability of the agent, the call gets routed. And again, this is pretty powerful if your company is much larger, if the number of agents are much larger as well. That's precisely what the response group allows you to do. And just a caveat here, this is not a replacement for your robust call center scenarios, because call center scenarios are, again, very purpose-built based on what your specific requirements are. While response group allows you to do various other things such as masking, having anonymous inbound calls, as in when the caller comes in, the user is connected to an agent, the agent can remain anonymous. Or when the agent places a call outbound to a customer, it can be placed on behalf of a group in a way that it does not reveal the identity of that person. In other words, in this particular case, it's the brokerage group that's actually making a call. And one other thing to keep in mind is also, at this point in time, the response group is absolutely optimized to work great with the Link soft client. We are aware of some delays that are being sort of hit with some of the IP phone devices. We are actively working on that to make sure there is optimized performance. However, at this point in time, Link soft client is absolutely optimized to work great with the response group. And if you absolutely have to use Link Phone Edition clients as for these agents, make sure it's not for any mission critical. As in, if it's internal, it's absolutely fine. But if you're running any mission critical operations, then you want to be absolutely sure the device itself is optimized. Okay, on-site network. So any questions? Because on-site networking, it's a totally different, it's a different realm that we're going to jump into.
Any way to add a common area phone to a response group as an
agent? The question is, any way to add a common area phone as a response group agent? The answer is no. Okay, so on-site networking. So there are various dimensions to the networking requirements and also the networking provisioning for Link. One is how is Link designed to be resilient in various network conditions? We're going to look into that. Design for interoperability. This again, when we're talking about networking, we're actually talking about two different networks of solutions. And what have we done to enable sort of address those kind of requirements. And I'm pretty sure a lot of folks in here have different at least, you know, the popularity of Cisco. How many of you folks currently have a Cisco deployment in your company? Okay, so fairly some. I thought it was going to be much higher, but it's a very popular one, and it's pretty omnipresent. Just a reminder, there is another session that's going to be on Thursday at 2:45 that specifically is going to talk about how you plan for interoperability, coexistence, and migration with other IPPBX. We will be addressing Cisco as an example, but it could basically seamlessly apply to other IPPBX systems as well. And the administration, from an administration perspective, what do we offer? So we'll look into that as well. Yeah. So from a resiliency perspective, there could be different situations where you would need resiliency, right? One is you're actually talking about a very robust central site. No problem. You do not anticipate any problems on a regular basis. But if things do go south, let's say something bad happens to that particular data center, or at least, you know, the link pool that's been set up, what kind of resiliency would you expect? Are you worried about the service availability of the user and to kind of basically have them have those users sign back in immediately? Or I'm more worried about the data. If it gets lost permanently, is there a way for me to restore those data? And it could take a few hours for me to move these users potentially to another pool, but what is my main concern? So in order for us to address, there are two things to it. Link allows you to pair two pools together. So in other words, when I provision end users to a specific pool, I can also have that pool paired with another pool. In case the primary pool goes down, the users automatically fail over to the backup pool. Now, the caveat here is the users are still able to sign in. They're still able to have voice connectivity. They're able to place PSTN calls, all the good stuff. However, they will not have full functionality, as in the conference is not going to be available presence, and they're going to be in what's called as the survivability mode. In other words, they will not be able to write stuff. They will not be able to create new data and then commit to the database, right? Now, if that's not acceptable, if you want to ensure that even if geographically one site goes down, earthquake, whatever calamity strikes, I want to ensure full functionality to be available, there is another option which is called as the metropolitan resiliency, where you are actually splitting a pool across of two geographic locations, and which allows you to basically deal with the situations where one geolocation, one caveat, of course, is it's going to be within the same metropolitan location, though. You don't want the delays between two sites that are too far apart to affect the performance itself. Now, that's the pool failover. Branch office survivability, this is another level where you're actually worried about smaller sites whose WAN connectivity is pretty flaky, and the WAN outage is almost predicted or it happens on a regular basis. And in some companies, it's almost expected. The amount of bandwidth that's provisioned, it will not actually meet the peak usage requirement. And they know it. And this is where the concept of call admission control and then the PSTN failover comes in really handy. And if you folks are interested in learning more about it, please find me after the session. We can talk more about it. Call admission control and DHCP marking, and again, oh, sorry, just a step back. So from a branch office survivability, we've worked with third-party partners, gateway vendors essentially, to build what's called as the survivable branch appliance. What it is it's an appliance that always guarantees that the branch user is signed into Link and the voice functionality is always available, even if it is cut off from the main central site. So if the WAN connectivity is cut, no problem. They will still be able to sign into the survivable branch appliance, and I'm connected to the PSTN, and at no point in time do I not have voice available. So that the SBA or the Survivable Branch Appliance guarantees that. Call admission control and DHCP marking. These are essentially provided to ensure quality of experience to the end user. What call admission control, for folks that are not aware of it, what call admission control allows you to do is to set a limit on the amount of bandwidth that could be used across various WAN links. And if the usage of WAN goes above that, the call, new sessions that are being attempted is automatically failed. And the reason why it is done is anytime there is over subscription of bandwidth, it not only affects the new sessions, but it also affects the existing sessions. So you want to cap bandwidth usage, and then once the usage goes over the limit, you basically want to disallow any new sessions. And this basically guarantees that the existing sessions have good quality of experience. DHCP marking, this is really to do with QoS. Link does support DHCP marking, and the recommendation for voice, which is considered mission critical, is to have the highest priority sort of stamped to the audio packets. Video is, from our experience, is more sort of people are more tolerant to it just because it's okay to have choppy video, but it's just not acceptable to have choppy audio. And interestingly, voice stays right on top, followed by application sharing. And because these two are fairly, you know, mission critical from a modality perspective, like I said, video comes last. For SIP signaling, which is not really that sensitive to delays and packet loss, because it's, I mean, primarily it's TCP, so there's not going to be packet loss. But even if there's delay, the payload size and the issue that the delay causes itself is insignificant. It's not going to, you know, end of the day, it's not going to matter. Okay, so another thing is design for interoperability. One thing I'd like to point out is there is another session that's going to be specifically talking about interoperability. But one thing to keep in mind is Link fundamentally designs its product with interoperability as a requirement. So it's fundamentally native to the design. So anytime we design stuff, we will absolutely make sure we are interoperable. There is complete virtualization support. There is another session specifically focused on virtualization on Thursday. If you folks are interested, I would encourage you to attend that. And centralized deployment. This is where it actually, the biggest bang for the buck from an administration perspective is. So for every deployment, even if your role, such as your survivable branch appliance, could be spread all across the globe, it can be managed centrally. In fact, the data, the configuration data that is committed, there is only one copy of the truth, and that gets replicated across all the components in Link. So it becomes very convenient, and also it becomes very predictable, it becomes very consistent. And from an administration perspective, we all already saw. So it's PowerShell-based management, which means that you can actually write tools to actually meet your needs. And not only just that, you can actually write scripts to actually make sure your workflow that you've defined is streamlined. And that's a big, big value. It does not have to be manual at all. You're not going to go into a web-based console and then clicking through stuff. The management is absolutely scriptable. In fact, the upgrade process itself can be potentially scripted. And role-based admin access control, what this is, what we call as the RBAC. What it is it actually provides different levels of control over various objects itself, link objects itself, that could be managed. And this is fairly powerful because, just to give you an example, the level of authority that's needed to configure a network configuration, for example, is fairly lower than the level of authority that you would need to configure voice policy for a user. And if we can associate various levels of access for each of these link objects, that is super powerful. This makes sure that your deployment is very secure, and then there is no unintended configuration that was actually done maliciously. Not, it's intended configuration done maliciously. And advanced quality monitoring, of course, this comes for free. CDR reporting, quality reporting is all integrated into Link. So if you were to kind of do diagnosis on a particular call, if an end user complains about a call, one of the examples that we saw was the malicious call tracing, but it's not just limited to malicious call tracing. It goes beyond that. If an end user complains about bad audio quality, it's all the information is available about when the call itself was made and even all the media related information, which we call as the QoE information, is as well available. So it's kind of integrated. You do not have to go to different places to get information about your CDR data and your voice quality data. And this is kind of a snapshot of an Uber report. This is kind of like a dashboard of your application sharing, sort of usage trends, if you will. And this kind of gives you an idea of what the utilization is and what the failure rate was, and gives you a feel for how did my system perform. And if you have to drill down deeper, you could always do that, but the dashboard kind of gives you an overall view, and based on the modality that you're interested, you could drill down deeper further. Okay, so in the interest of time, so I'm just gonna, there are three camps that we could potentially look into, right? So at this point in time, if you're like, I really want to retain my PBX, and I really don't want to mess with my existing system, that's well and good. You could still use Link for presence. It's just that the end user experience is going to be fairly fragmented. You're going to use Link for presence, instant messaging, great experience, but then for voice, it's kind of fairly fragmented. Connect with PBX, what this is I want to enable set of users for Link, for voice workload as well, but I still want to make sure I do coexist with my existing PBX. And this could be done in a very incremental way. And finally, replace the PBX, and this is where you're saying, I'm absolutely convinced I've already piloted and I'm good to go. And this is where things kind of happen when the second phase is completed. You want to be able to connect to the PBX. No, I've not seen anybody kind of rip their PBX and then, you know, boom, just go into Link. And that's kind of the approach that Microsoft took as well. And as of last week, 100K users have been voice enabled. So their complete workload is all on Link, and we've been, you know, it's worked out great. And even from a Microsoft perspective, it's been a phased approach because two reasons. One is it's a large deployment. It's geographically dispersed. But you want to have a phased approach. You just don't want to basically, you want to be responsible when you're enabling, especially when you have an existing PBX. Okay. So we have a few minutes for Q&A. We could do that, or I can try to finish up the slide deck. But this slide deck is going to be shared with you folks. Nothing new that, we've already covered most of it. So from the slide deck, you should have a good understanding of, if it should be fairly obvious. But if you'd like to discuss more questions, I'm happy to take some questions. You guys are so ready. Okay. All right. So, let me go from bottom up. If you want to retain the PBX, so what approach should you do? You know, you should have separate set of servers and vendors for UC, in which case it would be us. And it's more costly because you're actually thinking about two separate workloads. And even from an end user perspective, it's not the most optimal. From the workload that is being enabled, it's kind of fairly fragmented. Connect with PBX, do direct SIP to IP PBX. You can coexist and then do a phased migration from one system to another, absolutely. And then you could also do a gateway to a TDM PBX system. So the gateway would basically act as the bridge between your link system and the existing traditional TDM systems. And of course, in this particular case, you would use LinkWise, because what you're essentially doing is you're creating a segment of users that are completely enabled for link and another segment that will continue to be on TDM. And clearly, this is going to be a phased approach. And the good news is the users are completely on link. They don't have split workload. And replace the PBX, of course, you could take the approach of SIP trunk or use a gateway to connect to the PBX, PSTN. And what this essentially would mean is link is everywhere. And with that, I would like to conclude the presentation. And I'm going to be available for any offline conversation if you folks are interested. And of course, we'll be sharing out the slide deck as well. So the following slide basically summarizes the different approaches and what you should keep in mind while considering it.